Let's begin. Do you have a that's from the last couple of classes, first same sheet that I've been working with. So if you have a copy of it?
Not with me.
That's the last one. Does anybody else need a copy? I can make some more if we need to. Can make more if we need. Anybody else need? I think that was. Okay, this one I've written on, so let me give you. I'm going to. That's what I'm looking to give you. Exactly that. Let's make sure that I have.
No.
I'm missing the first page, but you only really need the first page anyway.
That's an original set.
Okay, let's begin in at the end of last shiur. I sort of ran through it at the end quickly, and I want to start from a brief review of the basic thesis that we put forward at the end of the shiur last week, because from there we're going to essentially build it's going to serve the foundation of what we're going to do moving forward. We started with a challenge or a question as to exactly what the Rambam means when he talks about emuna, faith, belief. We retranslated the word into trust, and we'll review that in a moment. And he talks about the first principle as essentially having emuna in the existence of God, who he defines as Habore, the creator, and then proceeds to define characteristics of what it means, what being the creator means. Being the creator means being the cause of all things, being independent of creation, creation being completely dependent upon the creator, begins to describe in detail exactly the significance of the definition of God as the creator. And all of those definitions, all that the Rambam elaborates upon, all relate to the relationship between the creator and that which is created. So the implication of belief in God as creator means that that which is created is dependent upon the creator is independent of the created, and so on and so forth. That's essentially how the Rambam elaborates in language that is borrowed from Aristotelian terminology, but essentially that's the piece of it, that's the message. That we believe in God who created the world. Therefore, that which was created is dependent upon the Creator. God is independent of the Creator. God is created. God is perfect in every way, etc. We challenged this definition of emuna as belief, or faith, as they are often referred to, by virtue of the fact that the Rambam seems to link this idea to Yitziat Mitzrayim. Yitziat Mitzrayim is a function of the Exodus, is miracles. It's a whole different concept than creation, and most philosophers distinguish between faith based on the experience of the creation of the Exodus from Egypt versus faith based on a belief in God who created the world. The Rambam seems to link the two, and he does so by sourcing the concept of emunah in the command to have whatever emunah means. A command, a mitzvah, or a mitzvat emunah, based on the pasuk of Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I am the Lord your God who took you out of the land of Egypt. To understand that, we then started to explore the notion of how do you command belief, the mitzvah of emunah. This is somewhat of a oxymoron. How do you instruct or command belief in the commander? And that led us to the Kuzari, And the Kuzari's mashal, if you will, the parable of the king of Hodu, the parable of the idea that our relationship with the king begins with some kind of tangible connection to the king, and then from there, by extension, to the broader philosophical ideas of what the king is all about. That was the mashal, the parable that the king of that the Kuzari wrote in the beginning of Sefer Kuzari. We applied that to the concept of emunah. We applied that to the Rambam, essentially arguing that the Rambam is not talking about belief in God. That's you can't talk about a mitzvah of belief. What the Rambam talks about is the mitzvah not of emunah but of Leida sheyesham eloka, the mitzvah of knowledge. What does mitzvah of knowledge mean? How do you command somebody to know something? And that's where we began to retranslate our terms. So the first term that we translated is the term yidi'ah, ladaat, not in the context of knowledge, but in the context of relationship. Knowledge is a form of relationship. It's a relationship I have with the world around me. Through my senses, I acquire knowledge because that's how I interrelate with the world. So knowledge is a form of engagement with the world. In human knowledge is derived through our senses, and we use those senses to enter into a relationship with the world around us, whether it be inanimate objects or with people or with ourselves. But all relationship is based on, all knowledge essentially is a reflection of some kind of relationship to the world around me. If we talk about knowledge of God, then the same application applies. We're not talking about knowledge in an abstract sense, but rather the notion of entering into a relationship with God. And that's essentially the goal, the mitzvah of Yidiat Hashem, is the mitzvah of having a relationship with God. In that context, we redefine the term emunah as well. And I showed you a number of examples why the term emunah, as translated as faith or belief, falls short. The better translation of the word emunah is trust. Yadav emunah ad boker, when Moshe stood with his hands over the people of Israel in the battle of Amalek, and it says that his hands were emunah ad boker, doesn't mean that his hands were faithful in the sense of belief, but rather faithful in the sense of loyal, trusting. The people could trust that his hands would stay there all night long. Similarly, we talk about God's emunah, Rabbah emunatecha, in the declaration of Modani. So if emunah is no longer translated as faith, and da'at is not knowledge, but rather, that was essentially the conclusion that we came to, emunah is translated as trust, and da'at is relationship. I can then talk about a causal connection between these two words. It is essentially emunah which leads to da'at. It is trust in God that leads to a relationship with God. And suddenly all my terms change. Instead of talking about a mitzvah of belief in God, I now can talk about a mitzvah of relationship or trust in God. Belief was established from Yitziat Mitzrayim. They didn't question the existence of God. What they questioned, even when they were worshiping the golden calf, was never the existence of God. It was always the nature of the relationship with God, then how that relationship would manifest itself, how trustworthy, how loyal would they be to the instructions that God had given them. But abstract atheism, non-belief in God, doesn't enter into the picture, certainly not in the context of the story of Tanakh. And really, as a concept in society, doesn't enter into societal philosophy until the Enlightenment. So when we talk about the Jews, we talk in the biblical terms of the rebelliousness of Israel at various times, Their rebelliousness is that they weren't trusting. They weren't trustworthy. They weren't loyal. It wasn't that they didn't believe. And that's two different things. Understand? That's essentially where we left off. That the mitzvah, as defined by the Rambam, is a mitzvah of da'at, of relationship with God, that is based on a trust in God, rather than a more abstract notion of belief. A couple of interesting sources to work with in terms of this idea. One is actually the probably the source for the Rambam's terminology, although the Rambam doesn't tell me where he gets the source. I think actually if I had to pinpoint where the Rambam connects the notion of Mamad Har Sinai to the notion of da'at, knowledge of God in the sense of the relationship with God, I think the source is actually in Chumash, and that's where I wanted to take you right now, which if you look at what is the last page in the source booklet that you have. Dvarim Perek Dalid, we find the following psukim. Ki sha'alna liyamim rishanim mashayu lefanecha leminayom shebara Elokim Adam al haaretz ulemikteh ha'shamayim v'ad kteh ha'shamayim. If you were to ask, to seek, to try to explore history from the earlier days, liyamim rishanim, from the days that were from the very beginning of existence, from the day that God created the world, until the ends of the heavens, meaning look at every generation, in every time, and in every place. Has there ever been a precedent for such a thing? Will there ever be a precedent? Has there ever been a precedent? This thing is, that which we're about to describe, is truly remarkable in that it has never and will never be repeated. Hashama am kol Elokim midaber min ha'esh kasher shamata atavayech. Has a nation ever heard God speak from the fire as you heard God speak and lived? Description of Har Sinai. First of all, that in of itself completely unrelated to our shir, but important to stop and understand the implication of these verses. What the Torah is essentially saying is that Mamad Har Sinai, the experience at Sinai, because it was global, because it was national, because it was all of Israel standing at the foot of the mountain hearing God's voice at once, gives it a credibility that is unprecedented and unparalleled. No other people on the history of humankind would or could ever make such a claim to such an experience. The anthropologists and historians of history will corroborate that statement. Or hanisa Elokim lavo lekachat lo goy mikerev goy, or has God ever tried to, or has any nation ever claimed that God took them out nation from within nation? B'masot ba'otot u'v'moftim u'v'milchama u'v'yad chazaka u'v'izron u'tuya u'v'moraim gdalim, with all of the outstretched hand and the strong arm and the miracles and wonders that took place in Egypt. K'chol asher asah lachem Hashem Elokechem b'mitzrayim le'enecha, as everything God did for you before your eyes in Egypt. So here I have two anchors of Jewish thought, of our experience, both unprecedented. One, Mamad Har Sinai, the other, Yetziat Mitzrayim. The Torah testifies that these are unprecedented and will remain unprecedented. For what purpose is all of this? Says the Torah, Ata horeita lada'at ki Hashem hu Elokim en od milvado. You have been shown this lada'at to, it's normally translated as, to know that there is a God. So all of this, Yitziat Mitzrayim, Mamad Har Sinai, the whole experience, in order to know that there is a God, all of this just to establish credentials? Or does the word da'at here mean something far more? The purpose of the Yetziat Mitzrayim and the purpose of Matan Torah was to enter into a substantial contract relationship with God forever, defined as ladat et Hashem, to know God in a sense of having a relationship, a trusting, ongoing relationship. We went out of Egypt in order to enter into that permanent relationship with God. The connection between Yetziat Mitzrayim, Mamad HaSinai, and the notion of da'at et Hashem is a connection that the Rambam makes, right? Mitzvah ladat sheyesh am Elohim, there's a mitzvah to know there is a God. The Rambam, I think, is basing that connection on these psukim. Do you follow what I'm suggesting? It's that the psukim in Perek Daled link the experience at Sinai to the notion of atahor eta lada'at, to this notion of relationship or da'at. The Rambam then goes one step further and takes the concept of da'at and HaSinai and takes it back one step, namely back to creation. Defines the mitzvah of Ladat to know that or to enter into a relationship with God who created the world. But this connection, I think, is explicit in the text. It actually appears at the, again in the end of this parak as well. Pasuk Lamed Tet, or 39, V'yadata hayom v'hashevota el vavecha. You will know today and take it to heart. And it's not just knowledge, it's an action. It's a whole way of life that is based on that knowledge. Hashavot el levavecha, ki Hashem hu alokim b'shemayim ma'av yala art mitachat ein od. In addition, I want to point out one additional set of psukim, which Stuart brought to my attention this evening, and I think it's very expresses exactly this idea. Every morning when the gentlemen put on their tefillin, we say a series of psukim. And those psukim speak specifically about the relationship between man and God, or between Israel and God. That relationship is defined by the Navi as a form of a marriage contract between God and Israel. The psukim specifically are, and we say them when we put the tefillin around our fingers, the psukim are ve'erastich li le'olam, I will betroth thee for eternity. Ve'erastich li betzedek uvemishpat ubechesed uverachamim, I will betroth thee with righteousness and justice and kindness and mercy. And the last phrase, ve'erastich li be'emunah v'yadat et Hashem. I will betroth thee with emunah, and you will know, or you will have da'at of Hashem. Again, if we work with our old translations, I will betroth thee with faith, and you will know God, has no meaning. But if I work with our new translations, I will betroth thee, or I will be trustworthy to thee. Trust is the foundation of any marriage relationship. I will betroth thee with trust, erastichli be'emunah, v'yadat et Hashem, and there will be the relationship with God, much as, and again, the borrowed imagery from the story of Adam and Chava, v'yadat Adam et Chava ishto, the intimacy of Adam and Chava as a relationship is now imitated or modeled in the relationship between God and Israel. Does that help clarify? Have I clarified or not? Maybe I've confused. But I just wanted to show you that once we work with these new translations, many other psukim and contexts and stories all kind of fall into place once we have this idea established. Yeah.
Why do we have to get into belief at all? Why don't we go? Don't we go straight into trust? I don't think we lose any of the meaning by going straight into trust.
Correct. What I'm suggesting is exactly that. I am suggesting that the Rambam never spoke about belief. That is an English term. It is our misrepresentation of the ideas of the Rambam based on the fact that we usually translate the word emunah as belief. I don't think the Rambam did, and I don't think the Rambam spoke about belief. It was not part of the issue. Remember that the opposite of belief in God is essentially either agnosticism or atheism. Neither existed before the Enlightenment. The world essentially was a religious world that believed in some kind of deity. Only question was what kind of deity. The notion of a secular mentality or a secular view of the world in which you don't believe in God is a concept which enters into society only during the Enlightenment, which is very, in human history terms, very recent. So it's completely anachronistic to talk about a mitzvah to believe that God exists, because every society, every people, every human being on earth always existed and believed in the existence of deity. Whether a deity or multiple deities, whether this deity or another, that was a question. So the issue in the Torah is not belief in God. The issue in the Torah is belief in one God. The issue in the Torah isn't belief, it's trust. Whom do you serve? To whom are you loyal? There's never an issue of belief. Even idolatry, even pure pagan idolatry, is not presented to us as not believing in God. It's presented as being loyal to another God. It's a different issue. Yeah, no, I think the Kuzari is actually saying a very similar thing. That's why I linked the two. Even though there are those who interpret the Kuzari and the Rambam as completely different worlds, I actually think that on this issue, they are not only similar, they're actually pointing in the same direction. The only difference between where the Kuzari is at and where the Rambam is the Kuzari starts this relationship from its most manifest form, which is the Exodus. Where does our relationship with God begin? If emuna is about relationship with God, where does our relationship with God begin?
Creation.
Yes and no. I think for the Rambam that's true, but essentially as a people, as a Jewish people, as a Torah people, where does our relationship with God begin? It begins at Mamre HaSinai. It begins at Yetziat Mitzrayim. And that's what the Kuzari does. The Kuzari starts there.
Well, the Kuzari is searching for that relationship.
Right. Yeah, I didn't get into the background of the history of the Kuzari, but that's true. He is searching for that relationship, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But for the Kuzari, that relationship begins where the Jewish people begin their relationship, which is Har Sinai. For the Rambam, and this is a concept which is now important for the next piece of it, for the Rambam, I believe, when he talks about God as creator, was also talking about a relationship with God. He wasn't talking about belief in the existence of God. He was talking about the beginning of our relationship with God. The difference is, however, that the Rambam's definition of relationship with God is more universal, because it starts not at the beginning of the relationship between God and the Jewish people, but begins at the beginning of the relationship between God and
creation.
Human history, human beings. Mankind, humankind. And that's why he takes us back to creation. So it's the relationship side. In other words, for the Rambam, he wants to globalize the issue of trust, relationship with God, for not only for us, but for all of human history. That relationship on a global scale begins at the moment of creation. All of existence has a relationship with God. What's the relationship between the universe and God? Well, what's the relationship between the universe and God?
The
universe is created by God. That's the relationship. The relation, the concept, the word creation defines the relationship. We are the created by God. That's the relationship we have. Why is this significant? Because I believe, and this is sort of the segue into my next piece, which is that the Rambam intentionally talks about the concept of God as a form of relationship because there is no alternative. What's the alternative? The alternative is to talk about God as a concept, define God. And you can't do that. Let me explain what I mean. Let me go back to the Kuzari for a moment. When the Kuzari is asked, what do you believe in? What is your, the foundation of your faith, if you will, in a broader sense? And he starts with the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim. And the rabbi is all, and the king is all confused. He says, I don't know what this is all about. What are you doing? Why do you do this? So he says, let me tell you a story. And he gives him a mashal. Gives him a parable. Right? Remember the story of the mashal? It's called the Mashal Melech Hodu. Parable of the king of India. He gives him a whole story about if there was a king of a nation far away in a land that was a good land and with good people, and you heard that they had a king, and you didn't know anything about this king, but you knew that the people were good, would you be loyal to this king? Do you remember that episode? One of the questions in the study of Sefer Kuzari, and this I'm going to digress for a moment, in the study of Sefer Kuzari, one of the questions that's always asked is, it's such a simple concept. Our relationship with God starts at Yetziat Mitzrayim. So I define our relationship with God from Yetziat Mitzrayim. Why does he need a 10-paragraph parable to describe what is such an obvious and simple concept? If I were to ask you, where does our relationship as a people start with God? The answer is, Yetziat Mitzrayim. I need a parable of the king of India to explain why our relationship with God starts from Yetziat Mitzrayim and not from creation. We were there, we saw it, we experienced it. We'll talk about creation too, but we have no empirical evidence to creation. We have no experience with creation. Yetziat Mitzrayim, we have experience. Our grandparents were there. Why does he need the mashal? One of the answers that's given is in the study of Sefer Kuzari, the Rabbi Yehuda Halevi does more than just tell a story. The form of that story is a significant expression of the story itself. The use of a parable is important because it is the methodology of the parable that expresses the same idea that Rabbi Yehuda Halevi is trying to convey. Namely, to describe it schematically, for every mashal there is a nimshal in Hebrew. In English, for every parable there is, I'm not sure what the English equivalent of a nimshal is.
A narrable.
Is there such a word?
No.
Hmm. I thought, yeah, I don't know. No. For every parable, there is a lesson, a message that lies at the heart of it. The application. That's probably the best word. The application. Right? When would I use a mashal? Why would I not just talk about the nimshal? Why would I use a parable, a story, to convey an idea?
When it simplifies the picture, it's easier to understand.
When it simplifies it and easier to understand, or when the idea that I'm trying to convey is either too difficult to understand without it, or possibly even not only too difficult to understand without it, but possibly even inconceivable, impossible to understand without it. In that context, if I were to ask you the question, define God.
You're going to do it by metaphor. You're never going to do it directly.
Correct. Because you can't. Because you have no frame of reference by which to define God. That was exactly what happened to the Kuzari. The king asked him to define God. By saying, define your faith, he essentially said to him, define your God. And he said, I can't. The only thing I can describe is what God does for me. I can tell you what he does for me. I can't tell you what he is. I have no frame of reference with which to tell you what he is. Then the king's not satisfied, so he pushes him. So he says, well, I'll tell you a parable. You couldn't understand the application without the parable, because we can't understand God without the application, the relationship, the context in which we interrelate with God. So in the context of the Sefer Kuzari, the parable is not only the application, but it's also the lesson itself. The use of the parable is part of the lesson that he's trying to convey to the king. That the essence of God is an untouchable. It's an undefinable. I can only ever get to God through whatever relationship I have with God. But define God in absolute terms, clear definition, not possible. I think the Rambam was working off exactly the same idea. Why do I say that? Look at the Rambam's Ikar. Let's go back to the text of the Rambam for a moment. Look at the Rambam's Ikar. Hayisod HaRishon. We're going back to the very beginning. This is at the end of the day, we have to go back to our original source. The principle itself, the first foundation, is to believe in the existence of the Creator. He doesn't say the existence of God. He doesn't say Mitziyut Eloah. He doesn't say Mitziyut Hashem. He describes God as Haboreit Barach, the Creator. Why? Why didn't he say the first foundation is to believe or trust in the existence of, or to trust in God? Because it's a word that has no meaning. If I'm looking for an explanation of what God is, then there's nothing to say anymore. I have no frame of reference for it. The only thing I can do is define how God relates to me. In what way do I perceive the manifestation of God? And there he goes on to describe this Creator in terms of the relationship the Creator has to the created. So he says, this Creator is completely independent of that which is created, and all that is created is completely dependent upon the Creator. And if we were to imagine for a moment that the Creator would cease to exist, everything that exists would cease to exist. And if we would imagine for a moment that everything exists did not exist, then the Creator would continue to exist. Is that a definition? Does that explain what God is? Or explain what God isn't, maybe? A negative definition. It explains what God isn't. It explains some aspect of the manifestation of the relationship between God and the world around us. So essentially, the Rambam and the Kuzari have done exactly the same thing. The only difference is that the Kuzari started that relationship with the Yetziat Mitzrayim. The Rambam took it back one step. But the concept is the same. I can only define the relationship I have with God. I can never put my finger on and define the essence of God. And the Rambam will never make an attempt to define God or any attribute of God in abstract, absolute terms. He will always describe God in the relationship of God to the world on some level. Come back to Ladat. Knowing God is impossible. Relationship with God is very possible.
In the Ten Commandments story, I vaguely recall that God passes in front of...
We're going to get to the psukim in a moment. That's the psukim we're going to get to in a second. That's exactly the same application. Absolutely correct. Hold the thought for a second. We'll get there.
The reference to Yetziat Mitzrayim, that's specific to the Hebrews.
Sure.
Okay, so what's of the rest of humanity?
The certain, for the rest of humanity, there's a response, there's an obligation to believe or to trust in or to have a relationship with God as well. The Rambam's the concept of God or godliness or creator for the Rambam is a universal concept.
Okay, but precisely, so you have to relate to two different things to be able to.
That's why we have Sheva Mitzvot Bnei Noach. The application of this, when it comes down to tachlis, if you will, is that Bnei Yisrael, who went, that all of humankind is obligated in the seven mitzvot Bnei Noach, which includes monotheism and relationship with God. Bnei Yisrael went through one more step, which was Yitziat Mitzrayim and Mamar HaSin. I have an additional 605 mitzvot. 606 mitzvot. Math was never my strong point. Yeah.
But there's a fundamental difference, because the rest of humanity did not experience Har Sinai. So God is the creator, maybe all of humanity might understand, but the God who's involved in your day-to-day activities, they might not understand.
That's true to an extent, although, if I work through the application of the implication of Mamar HaSinai for us, you had the similar experiences in Sefer Breshit with all humanity. You had Noach and the Mabul, and you had Doha Palaga, and you had the Sheva Mitzvot Bnei Noach. So you had moments when that manifestation was there, and from that tradition was supposed to develop the Sheva Mitzvot Bnei Noach, but Bnei Yisrael had its own tradition. So perhaps to a lesser degree, but the expectation is still there eventually. There's also the notion that through Israel and our experience, that message will get across to the rest of the world at some point, but that gets into Yimot HaMashiach, which is principle number 12, so we're not there yet. Hopefully when we get to the later Ikarim, specifically number 5 and 6, where we talk about idolatry and monotheism, we'll talk a little bit about the Rambam's view of both Christianity and Islam, because Rambam had a very unique view in which he saw them as significant steps towards bringing humanity from their pagan roots towards their monotheistic goal, and he saw them as steps along the path, which is very interesting in itself. Let me come back to the psukim that Stuart was referring to. If I take this idea that the whole point of referring to creation in terms of the relationship with God, because even that earliest definition of God, if you ask somebody on the street and say, what is God? He'll tell you the creator of the world. And even that essentially is a description of a relationship with God and not the core essence of what God is. That notion that God is undefinable other than the way in which we interrelate to God is at the core the meaning of one of the most esoteric dialogues in the Torah. And really, the meaning behind the whole experience between Moshe and God on Har Sinai. So let me just show you the psukim for a moment. We say them often, we read them often, we say them every time, we read them at every... the time we say slichos, we read them, and fast days. But let me just show you briefly what I'm referring to. Go back to the last page of the source book. Yeah? In the aftermath of the sin of the golden calf, after God forgave the Jewish people for the sin of idolatry, or whatever this golden calf story was, Moshe then... people worship a golden calf. Moshe asked for forgiveness. God said yes. Moshe saw he had a good thing going, so he decided to push his luck a little bit. Vayomer Hashem Moshe gam et davar asher dibarta eser ki matzata chem be'einai ve'eid da'acha b'shem. Moshe had raised the question of knowing God through God's name. So God says, fine, I will, if you have found favor in my eyes, I will agree to this request, and I will make myself known to you through my name. Ve'eda'acha b'shem. By and of itself, that's a meaningless statement. What does it mean to make myself known to you through my name? But translate it now into the terminology we've been using up until now. If da'at doesn't mean knowledge, it means relationship. So what is God saying to Moshe? Eda'acha b'shem. It's not God who will know Moshe. It's God who will allow Moshe to enter into a unique relationship with God through an understanding of the concept of the name of God. And remember, there are more than one name to God. If there's more than one name to God, that means that there's more than one. What is a name? Is a name an identity? If my name is Moshe, does that mean that I am a Moshe? Is the name a description of who I am?
It's a label, it's a handle.
It's a label. It's an it connects me to others. If I had no other human being in the world, if I was a complete lone entity in existence, would I need a name?
No.
I only need a name because I have to interrelate with others. When Adam was created and he needed an Ezer Kenegdo, he needed a mate, he needed some kind of partner in the world, God brought him every type of creature in the world and he named them. Meaning he defined the relationship that he had with them, but none of them were exactly a Ezer. So God created woman, and the first thing man does is he names her, because the name reflects the relationship. Eda'acha b'shem, I will enter into a relationship with you through the various names of God. Yudke Vavke, which is God of history, Elohim, which is God of justice and din. All of the different names which reflect a different form of that relationship. Then Moshe says, that I understand. God, show me your kavod. What is kavod? Your glory. That already is a very different issue. What is your glory? What does that refer to? Talk about kavod Hashem malet mishkan. The glory of God filled the tabernacle, and Moshe couldn't enter into the tabernacle because it was filled with kavod Hashem. That's already a different manifestation. And we're not talking about a name. And we're not talking about a relationship. We're talking about something which is connected to the essence of God, God's presence. Can't say physical presence, but some manifestation of God's presence. Vayomer. That request, God responds to by saying, Ani a'avir kol tuvi al panecha. I will allow all of my goodness to pass before you. What is goodness? If not a manifestation of, if somebody is good, does that define who they are? Does that define the core of their being, if you describe them as good? Or does that describe a type of behavior, which again is a relationship between one and the other? You follow what I'm saying? The notion of tuvi, of God's goodness, is also a manifestation of the relationship and how God runs the world, operates the world, relates to the world, not the essence of God. V'karati b'shem Hashem lefanecha. And again, I will call out in the name of God, in the name of God, referring to this idea of relationship. V'chanoti et asher achom v'dichamti et asher arachem. I will have compassion upon whom I have compassion. I will have mercy upon whom I will have mercy. That's not a nonsensical statement. I don't know what is. What did God say to Moshe? I will have compassion upon whom I will have compassion. What does that mean? It means that there is a certain amount of knowledge of how God operates that you cannot have. And somehow it relates to the notion of over whom God will have compassion and over whom God will have mercy is an unknowable variable. That God has compassion and that God has mercy is an attribute, is a form of relationship that you can know. Over whom God will have mercy and over whom God will have compassion is to understand God. And you cannot know God.
Is that the way you're talking about that statement? Is that also a judgment?
What do you mean by a judgment?
You should have compassion on you, have compassion.
Say that again.
Compassion, compassion, mercy, mercy. I shall have compassion, I shall have compassion.
Right.
You have mercy, I shall have mercy.
Right.
So,
does that apply to judgment as well?
Yes,
absolutely. It applies to all the attributes of God. Then he clarifies this even further. You can't know my face. You can't see my face because God, a human being cannot see me and live. To see God is to see the essence of God. A human being can't, even Moshe Rabbeinu, can't see God. Why? Can't see his face. He'll be only entitled to see his back. We'll get to that in a moment. But he can't see his face. Why? Because this face, the panim, is a reflection of the essence. You know, there's a Kabbalistic concept, I've mentioned it before, that the face is a window into the soul. And it's based on a Mishnah in Sanhedrin that says that the greatest miracle of creation is that out of one stamp, God could create a different face in every human being. And no two human beings have the same face, even though how many variables are there in facial features at the end of the day? And yet every human being has a unique face because they have a unique soul. Le'otet panim, to see the panim, to see the face, is to see the panim, is to see the inside. And to see the inside, you see the essence of God is impossible. Le'yo'ani ha'adam b'chai, man can't see God and remain man, and remain human. Even Moshe. Vayomer Hashem, hinei makom iti v'nitzavta alatzur, here's a place with me, a little cleft of the rock. And when I pass my kavod over, when the essence of God passes over, I will cover up, I will cover you up so you can't see. But then I will remove my hand. You'll see my back, but not my face. What does that mean? What's the back of God? Does that make any more sense than seeing God's face and to see God's back? But if I understand these terms philosophically, metaphorically, the back essentially is the impact that we leave behind us. If I leave footprints in the snow, then everybody who walks and sees those footprints knows that I was there, even if they can't see me. They see my back. They see what I've left behind. But to see my panim, to see my face, to see my essence, they can't. Because the human being can't see God. The human being can only perceive God. The human being can never know or see God. Understand the difference? And that's essentially what God does. He brings Moshe to this mountain. He calls out in the name of God, which is again the manifestation of this relationship, and he passes over and he calls out, and it's unclear who calls out. Does God call out or does Moshe call out? I actually think in the pshat it's Moshe who calls out, and he declares the 13 principles: Hashem, Hashem, Kel, Rachum, Vachanun, Erech Apayim, Vedav Chesed, Ve'emen, Otze Chesed, La'alafim, Nosevom, Vefesha, Vechata, Ve'nakeh, Ve'nakeh, Lo Yenakeh, Paked, Avon Avot, Abanim, Ve'al B'nei Banim, Ve'al Shiloshim, Ve'al Yibayim. God who is merciful and kind and slow to anger and compassionate and who preserves righteousness for 1,000 generations and who forgives iniquity, but who never erases the iniquity completely, and who visits the iniquity of parents upon children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren. I always ask this question. Are these attributes of mercy or attributes of judgment? We define them as the 13 attributes of mercy. And with all due respect, it's 12 attributes of mercy and 4 attributes of judgment. Because we stop in the middle of a phrase. We stop at the phrase v'nakeh, which means he will cleanse the sin. But the phrase is v'nakeh lo yinakeh. God will not cleanse the sin, but rather he will visit the iniquity for 4 generations later. Whatever that means. But that's certainly an attribute of din, not of racham. What Moshe was shown and led to understand were the attributes of God. Attributes that can reflect compassion, love, kindness, mercy. Attributes that can reflect judgment, punishment, even up to 4 generations. He understood that God is din, and he understood that God is racham. The truth is that God is neither. Because we can't say anything about what God is. All we can say is how we perceive God in the world at any given moment. And when we perceive the manifestation, the relationship is a relationship of compassion upon an individual, upon a people, upon a community, upon a nation, we perceive God's midah, God's attribute of mercy and compassion. And when we perceive justice and harshness in the relationship with God, and we perceive God's running of the world being harsh and judgmental and lacking fairness, we talk about God's attribute of din. But they both reflect the manifestation of a relationship. Neither one is a description of God. They are a description of, at any given moment, how God interrelates to the world, of the acharai, the back. To understand God is to understand how those attributes are applied. If you wanted to understand God, then you would understand. If you could understand God, you could understand when God is compassionate and when God is judgmental. The fact that we can't understand that is an indication that we can't understand God, and that's exactly what God said to Moshe. What he said to him was, after I explain everything to you, Moshe, after I show you all my attributes of mercy, and I'll show you all my attributes of din, and I'll show you all the different ways in which I relate to the world at different times, you'll then put it all together and you'll ask yourself the question, do I now understand how God applies the attributes of mercy and compassion versus the attributes of judgment and punishment? And the answer will be no. Because if you understood that, you would be God. If you understood that, you'd understand the essence of God. Ufanai lo yirau. And you can't understand. That's the limit of the human being. We can only relate to God in the way in which God relates to us, and not through the essence of what God is, because we have no frame of reference for it. And that's where we come back to the question with which the Ramban began. Define belief in God? Forget it. I can't define God and I can't define belief, so there's nothing to talk about. But trust God, enter into a relationship with God. Relationship with God because he is your creator, master, director. Director of human history, director of Jewish history, because he created you, because you are dependent upon him for life and sustenance. Yes. That we can have. And so the Rambam defines the first yikar, the first foundation, as trust, emunah, in the creator who created you. And the obligation, therefore, the mitzvah of leida, of knowing, of entering into a relationship with God, who is the source of all things. Questions?
Does the Rambam assume emunah as defined as trust? belief with a precursor of chokhmah for both?
If I understand your question, which I'm not sure I do, but if I understand your question correctly, I'm going to make one modification. We translated the term emuna as trust. For us, we had to change the translation. But that's only because we were mistakenly translating the word. In other words, the notion of emuna as belief, meaning there are some who don't believe God exists, and we believe God exists. That idea was never in the Rambam's lexicon.
Does that require hope? Does that require knowledge of what we're talking about, or is that more of an emotional representation?
The notion of not believing, I just think if the translation of the word emunah doesn't mean belief in that sense. I don't think it ever did. I don't think the Rambam used it as a form of belief. The Rambam used the word emunah the way it was used in Tanakh, which is trust. It's my intuition. So I don't think he had that question. I think we started with the question because we didn't understand what the Rambam was talking about. Now we understand the Rambam.
Is that parallel with Aristotle?
I have no idea. I told you, I've never studied Aristotle. I wouldn't have a clue. Yes?
Isn't the relationship model you just described between man and God really, in essence, the same between two human beings? I mean, if in fact, you ask me how to describe you or how do I know you, it's in the form of a relationship. I mean, it might be able to give some physical characteristics, which I can't do.
That's the difference.
Ultimately, you are a neshama, who's some kind of breath of God or spark, whatever that is.
Yeah, but you see, you're confusing two different things. Let me clarify. If I were to ask you to define a human being, scientists have been doing it for years, and they would be able to do it. They would have the frame of reference with which to do it. They may not be able to include the neshama, but that's only because the neshama is a spark of God in you. And because God is undefinable, so is the neshama. But the human part of you, the physical part of you, is definable. Now, there's different frames of reference that we can use to define a person or a thing. We can use the chemical makeup to define a thing. We can use the physical characteristics to define a thing. We can use biology. We can use the DNA formula. But we have frames of reference with which we can formulate an answer to that question. When it comes to God, we have no frame of reference.
I think Mordechai is talking about defining a specific human being.
It doesn't matter.
It's
but
sort of about you would describe yourself. Who are you, Rabbi Shulman? You would say I'm a group of molecules, etc. I mean, you probably wouldn't.
Right. But I could.
You could, okay. I understand.
That's the difference. I could because we both exist in the same frame of reference. So whatever frame of reference you want to use to define a person, I could use to define you or me. Because we exist in the same plane frame of reference. But because we exist in a different frame of reference completely to God, we have no terms. We have no... What are you going to use to describe God? The only thing you can do is describe what he's not.
I guess I'm getting at is to really know you, though, or to know any other human being, it's in the form of the relationship you have with that person.
On the emotional level, that's true. Uh-huh. But we can define somebody beyond in other frames of reference other than emotion.
But how can you enter into a relationship with... God, who is in a different terms of reference than yours?
Excellent question. How do you enter into such a relationship with a God who is in a completely different frame of reference?
You're a character God. You take a leap of faith.
There is no leap of faith in the Rambam.
Okay.
We dropped that whole concept of emunah and leap of faith long ago.
We trust.
There's no leaps. There are no leaps. We're taking baby steps and we're walking along solid ground. No leaps.
So it's not a risk.
There's no risk. Absolutely not. In the Rambam's world, there's no risk. Rambam was not at all, I could be mistaken, but I don't believe that he was would have accepted that notion of Kierkegaard's a leap of faith.
But he wouldn't accept the notion of risk. that trust implies that you're willing to take a risk.
Maybe, but I don't think that's relevant to the issue right now. In other words, your question is, how do you enter into a relationship with a God who has no physical frame being and therefore no frame of reference? Well, obviously the relationship is not going to be one of, come home and give me a hug.
Right.
So what is it going to be? But we can use the same emotional frames. We could talk about love God, fear God, revere God. Right? We can talk about emotional relationship.
Yes.
How?
Well, and you, at that stage, you would only be able to talk about your own emotions.
Yes and no. We can't talk about God being angry. Sure, we can. We do it all the time. We talk about God being angry. The only difference is
it's a different frame of relationship. The anger of God and my anger are not the same. They're
different, right? Your anger I can see on your face. God's anger I can't see on his face. But how can I see it? If I get angry, how would you know?
Okay, so the way, I mean, we have to go through the manifestations of God.
The application.
Right?
The relationship. If I got angry, how would you know? Right, you could look on my face, but if you didn't see me, you could hear a voice, right? You could hear a voice that was a tone that was anger. I could walk into a room before you, and then you would walk in and you'd see all the tables nice and neatly set up and all the chairs, and then you'd walk out, and I could walk into the room, spend 10 minutes, make a lot of noise. You would walk in 5 minutes later and see every chair broken and every table smashed. What would you think? Would you think that I got angry and took it out on the furniture? Right? Jackie would never speak to me again, but if it was in this room, right? But you'd know that I was angry. Agree?
Mm-hmm.
We recognize God's emotions, not because God is angry, but because he manifests the application of that in the world. When God says to Moshe, I'm going to wipe out the Jewish people, because of the sin of the golden calf, we translate that as anger. Because it's the action, it's the manifestation. It's a form of the relationship. It's an application of the relationship.
But that might not be what it is from God's perspective.
100%. That's what anthropomorphism is all about. The notion of applying human attributes to God is not because we're describing God, but we're describing the application of a behavior pattern as we understand it. That's the relationship. Everything will be defined in these terms. What is the relationship we have? How does that relationship manifest itself? And the Rambam talks later on, much later on, talks about the fact that God is not physical in any way. So we can't even describe God's physical characteristics. We can't say that God sits or God stands. And yet we say things like, God flared his nostrils. We talk about Yad Chazakav Yisroel Netiyah. God took us out with a strong hand and an outstretched arm. God has neither hand nor arm. So we are describing phenomenon of moments in which God interrelates with the world, and we're using human frames of reference to describe a moment in which there is an interaction with the world. That's relationship. Yeah, those are the Torah's terms, but as Chazal say many times, Dibrat Torah b'lashon b'nei Adam. Right? The Torah is describing a attribute in terms that the human being can understand. The frame of reference of the human being. Because there is nothing to talk about when we talk about the frame of reference of God. God exists outside of any frame of reference we could possibly comprehend. This idea will take us through the first four principles. Because the first four principles, the Rambam will attempt to describe God. First principle is God as creator. Second principle is God as one. Third principle is God as non-physical. Fourth principle, God as, well, actually the first three principles. Fourth principle is something else. Did I miss one? What's the fourth principle? Yes, God is eternal. Right? Kadmon, God is eternal. First four principles will describe God in some way. In violation, seeming violation of what I just said, which is that you can't describe God. And yet the first four principles, Rambam does exactly that. He spends four principles out of 13 to describe God. God is creator. God is unique. One, God is not physical. God is eternal. So for the next four principles, we are going to be stuck on this question. How do you define God if God is undefinable? If the Rambam himself seems to imply that God is undefinable. And that will be the key to unlocking the next three principles. Principle number two, Bezrat Hashem, we will begin next Wednesday at 8 o'clock.